So my name's Diana Lempel. I'm here with Oral History Summer School in Hudson, New York, and we're working on creating an archive of the story of the city of Hudson that will be archived in the Hudson Library. And I'm here with Tisha at Tansy's. And if you'd like to introduce yourself, please, Tisha.
I'm Tisha Tanzillo Mulligan. I've owned Tansy's for about 8 years with my sister Sandy Tanzillo Gay. We were born in Hudson, lived here most of our lives. My sister has lived here her whole life. I lived away for about 20 years and came back in later life. I worked in the city for about 10 years, commuted on the train down to the city, and would come home every night. It's a great ride. It's a pretty view. It's an easy commute. After my sister retired from her former employment, I was laid off from my employment in the city, and we decided to open Tansy's Cafe to give us something to do. We did this in the neighborhood that we were born in. We were born about a block away from where we are now, and there are people on the block who knew us when we were babies, which is really a fun and interesting thing for us, just because we remember them as well. Probably one of the highlights for us was Mrs. Harkawa lived two doors up the street. She was 93 when we opened Tansy's, and she came in one morning, looked at us and said, "Oh my God, you're Frankie's kids." How fun was that? She felt that she was able to come out of her house in the morning. She would come down and have coffee, and she'd invariably run into somebody she hadn't seen in a long time. She had a lot of friends who lived here, but didn't feel quite comfortable going out by herself. So after we opened, she would come every day. She's been a highlight in this community. Formerly, this was the Italian section of the city with the Italian church on Union Street. Most of the Italian families knew one another, communicated together, paid for things with bread or eggs or raised chickens, and paid the grocer with chickens. We had deliveries of milk and deliveries of ice, and we all traded what we had in the neighborhood. We grew up knowing everybody for blocks around. It was a wholesome way to grow up. And it's nice to be back in that neighborhood now. It's not quite the same, but it's a more mixed neighborhood, which gives it a bit of culture and a little more fun. So that's a nice thing for us to be here. We've seen so many changes in Hudson since we lived here. It used to be a town where on Thursday nights the stores were open late. People would dress up and walk uptown and go into Woolworth's and have a soda, or Kresge's for a piece of cheesecake, and Newberry's to buy your favorite little toy item. You'd see everybody you knew from school. You'd see other family members. People would just walk through town and congregate. That was probably disappeared in the 70s when the strip malls came in and it sort of drove the smaller businesses out of town. We had the disappearance of the factories, moved to other places, different countries, different states, and that lost a lot of employment. So it also scattered a lot of the people who were living here. The town was almost like a ghost town. The storefronts were empty and some were boarded up. And you hate to see that happen in the place that you lived. But then came the antique dealers, and it's such a blessing to have somebody come and fill the stores. And with that comes another shoe store, comes a dress shop, comes a giftware. So the town has a lot more life than it's had in years, which is a great thing to see. So it's full of tourists now, which is so funny for me because I lived in tourist places and I never really thought of Hudson as a tourist destination. But I understand why people come. It's the kind of small town I would go myself for a weekend if I lived in, you know, a large city. So I get it. There's upcoming amount of people from the city moving up here with children, which is great because that's what you want to see. You'd like to see families come and stay. You hate to see retiring people move away and nobody fill those places. So now, in the last maybe 10 years, we've actually seen a turnover in population where people say, well, you know, the young people who were born here can't afford the property. That happens probably in a lot of places that you live. But now you have people coming in, professional people who can afford the properties, bringing children and bringing families. So it's only going to help the schools. It helps the neighborhoods. It helps the community as a whole, keeps the train running. So that's a good thing, I think. I know there's always been a little friction between the native people and the people that they call from the city. But you know what? Let's just live and enjoy each other's company. I think one of the things at Tansy's that I love is when I see local people come in and I see a table of people who only come on the weekends, have a city, live in the city and have a weekend home, and they start talking to one another across the tables. And then they talk a little more, and the next time they come in, they sit together. And I think that's what we wanted to do. That's exactly what we were hoping to see. So when we hear everybody's voices talking to my sister and I in the kitchen, it just feels so good to have people spend that time to get to know each other so you can take some of that bitterness away. And it is going away. So that's not only here, but I think in other places as well. So that's a really good thing about having a small business in a small town. One of the beauties of a small town is just you do know a lot of people. Not only people you know older, but you get to know your regular customers. You get to know your neighbors. You see them frequently. I recently had a friend from California come to visit me, and she was astounded at how many people that come in here I would know. But they've been coming for 8 years, so of course we would know who they are. And it's nice because people can ask you, who's a good plumber? Who's a good painter? Who's a good carpenter? I need an electrician. Who am I going to call? And it is nice to have that knowledge base to help people settle into the community. It's hard when you're new. You don't know where to go to get good quality people to work for you or to work with you. So it helps to know that kind of thing. It's a good place to live. It's a nice place to raise your family. I didn't realize how beautiful the Hudson Valley was. Being born here, I moved to San Francisco in my 20s, and I thought I had to get out of town. I was going to smother in a small town, and away I went. And I, like I said, I lived away for about 20 years. I lived in San Francisco. I lived in London. I lived in Belfast. And when I did come back, I had forgotten how beautiful the Hudson Valley really is. You don't always appreciate things as a younger person, but you have different eyes when you're a bit older and you can appreciate things differently. I'm happy to have been born here. I can remember when it was mostly farms. My mother's family had a fruit farm, and we used to laugh and say we were like slave labor because we would go to the farm 2 days after school got out, all of my cousins, there were 12 of us, and we would pick the fruit in the day for my uncles. We learned how to drive the tractor when we were 10 and 12 years old. We would have dinner and then we would sort and pack the fruit at night. Some of it was sold for juices, some of it was sold for baby food, some went to the local markets. But we would stay on the farm until the week before school when we would get a pay envelope and go buy our school clothes and school shoes. It was so great, so healthy to live on the farm, learn how it worked. I'm sure there may have been spray and things that's probably outdated now, but we had more fun growing up that way, living outside, essentially, in the packing shed and on the farms. But that farm now has been turned into a winery, which 40 years later is selling grapes to wineries, which that's an industry that hasn't really been in Columbia County before until maybe the past 15 years or so. So you see changes that way. This used to be mostly dairy farms and fruit farms, Some of the dairy farms are still here. A lot of the fruit farms are gone, but they're other things. So some are B&B land, park with a pond and those kinds of things. So it's nice to see the changes. It's nice to have an influx of new people because you do get a different perspective. You do get, for example, Club Helsinki brings a whole different cultural nighttime events for people to enjoy, which we've never had that kind of a venue in Hudson before. We had movie theaters and that was essentially it. We really didn't have any live entertainment. So it's nice to have that. It's nice to have some famous people come and play there. It brings people from all over the world. And I only know that because they come in for breakfast and say that they're performing at Helsinki or they're going to be recording in the music studios, which that's another phenomenon. Having four music studios in the county, I mean, we've never had that. So there's different cultural events that happen here. Things that that a lot of the local people don't take advantage of or don't realize or don't read about or participate in, which is really, that's a little sad. But I think as more word gets around, people will tend to participate more frequently. It's nice to have the Basilica up and running as a venue for art displays, for your weddings, for all kinds of local events. It's nice to have the Opera House. People trying to bring the Opera House back to life. In my day, it was a police station, so that's a little different to see for me. But before that, it was originally the Opera House, so it's nice to see it go back to that. And they have so many activities there for children, for adults, theater. That's just great to have. That's a big plus for this area. We have so many nice restaurants now, so many. My sister and I laugh. When we decided to do this together, we really wanted to run an afternoon tea place, but we knew that this locale wouldn't support that market, so we decided we would do light breakfast and late lunch, and we still do the afternoon tea, and the tea parties have worked well for us. But when we were looking around for a venue, for a place to rent, we decided to buy this building instead. And when we came to this block, the only other business on the block was directly across the street from us, and was a pizza place that's no longer there. There were no other businesses on this block. So we were kind of taking a risk thinking, okay, let's see what happens. And now, 8 years later, we have nice restaurants, two other cafes, a luxury nail place, a man who makes cabinets, another man who makes jewelry. So this block has come to life. There's a new bar on the block, kitchen appliances. It's a different environment than it was when we started, and it feels so nice to be able to have participated in that little growth of this downtown area. I remember when Cascades opened, everybody said to him, "You're crazy. He's been there 20 years. But at that time, businesses didn't go below 5th Street. Then when we came here, businesses didn't go below 3rd Street. And now they do. So that's great. That's such a nice thing to see. There's a lot of new B&Bs that have opened in Hudson. There's a new hotel that's opening, which is going to be great in the middle of Warren Street on in Hudson. So there'll be more places for people to stay. And it's just, it's unusual to see so many B&Bs, but they're all so nice and such lovely accommodation. And it just draws more celebrities. It's nice to have it. It's just so great to have it. I had someone call me from Tennessee the other day And it was a customer who had come in here who's going to be coming for a wedding and needed a place to stay. So it was nice to be able to offer them a list of places where they could go and accommodate their family members. Years ago, we didn't have that. We only had the St. Charles Hotel, which is still open and still running and is a clean, comfortable, basic hotel, still in the center of town, which is a good thing. And the Warren Inn, which is still operating as a motel. But now it's nice to have a little different experience with a B&B. Or there are apartments around to rent in some of the B&B locations. They have two that I know of. There are several apartments that you can rent. So if you have a family unit, that's a little nicer to be able to do that. Some have views of the Hudson River, which is so nice. People come to look at the lighthouse. There are tours that come up from the city. Bus tours come up from Long Island, bringing busloads of seniors to visit the lighthouse, visit Columbia County, or to visit Olana, just south of the city, which was the home of Frederick Church. It's a beautiful family mansion up a hill that's now been turned over to the state, so it's a lovely venue. It's a beautiful museum. Busloads come for that as well. So there are some interesting points to Columbia County that need to be pointed out. Art at Omai, for example, is an outdoor sculpture park that's probably been there 20 years now. And the first time somebody did it, everybody thought they were crazy, and now look where we are. There's actually, I think there's a new installation of about 4 or 5 pieces going on at the moment. So every year that gets bigger and better. There's a lot of new art galleries in town, which is something we've never had before, but it's so nice to see that. Culturally, I think we've expanded our horizons. This used to be a town of 52 bars when I was growing up. I don't know if there's 10 now. It's just such a different feel. We have the reputation for gambling and prostitution years and years ago. And the building that we now have as Tansy's was a pool hall where famous people like Minnesota Fats, for example, used to come and play the locals. And you'd pay $1 admission to get in and watch the games. You'd see the games. People would bet on the games illegally. They would also play cards illegally in the basement of this building. I remember a man, when we first opened, came into us and said his first job out of high school was with the power company. He was a meter reader. And he would come into this building and he said they would ring a bell so that by the time I got to the basement to read the meter, there was no money on the table, but they were playing cards. And he just looked and said, I might have been young, but I wasn't stupid. So we love to hear those stories about this building. We know most of the families who've owned it in the history. It started out in 1939. It was Larry's lunchroom, owned by a Sacco family member. Then it became a pool hall. Then another man owned it as another gambling den, and another continued the pool hall. And then it was an ice cream shop, and then a secondhand store and a pottery studio. And then it was ours. So here we are. There's a trap door space on the floor that we've left there that used to be able to let you get in and out of the basement really quickly. In the height of its gambling days. And we've decided to leave that as much as possible. We've left it the way it was. It's had a few changes, but it's just, to me, it's part of the history. We think there was probably a bordello in the attic from the wallpaper and the layout of where you can see furniture was, and that's been up there since the 1800s, so we've left that just as part of the history of the building. It's nice when people come in from out of town who have lived here. They all come back and want to see how it is, see who's running it now. They want to know if they can take a tour, if the tenants would allow them to see the apartments. It's just, that's kind of the way it is in this town. People like to see where they used to live. So many people my age have moved away for employment or circumstances in life, come back for family reunions or high school reunions and say, oh, I used to live across the street, or I remember you. You used to be, or you used to live, and I know your family. That's a nice thing about a small town. You don't often find that in a larger city. It's just not the same feel. It's nice to be able to share some of that history with people you knew in your life. I'm trying to think of what else I can tell you.
Well, I was wondering if you could tell me a little bit more about, you said you and your sister originally wanted this to be a place for afternoon tea.
We did.
I was wondering if you could tell me a little bit more about that.
I was lucky enough to live in Ireland for a year and a half, and then I spent 7 years in the UK. So I developed a taste for afternoon tea. And I'm also married to a man from Ireland, so afternoon tea was common for him. My sister was on vacation with her husband in Tennessee. They went to an afternoon tea room. He called me and said, I think you and your sister should do this as a business. And when they came home, we talked about it, and we thought, well, why not do it? We both love it. We both love doing it. We like serving it. We like to make the little fussy sandwiches and the fussy little tea cake. So we decided, why not give it a go? So we figured we can cook. We don't have any formal training, but we learned about tea. We learned how to make an afternoon tea. I mean, we both experienced it, so we knew what we wanted, how we wanted it to be. And we wanted it to be a comfortable afternoon tea where you can relax for as long as you want and just enjoy yourself. We didn't want it to be fussy and white glove. We didn't want it to be as snooty. We just wanted it to be comfortable. So that's what we did. And that's what we do. And that developed a whole business of bridal showers and baby showers and girls, college women wanting to have a group of 20 people come for afternoon tea because they can meet here from different parts of the state. So we have some who come every year, groups of 10, two come from Schenectady, two come from Buffalo, two come from the city, one comes from Westchester, and they just meet and they want to have tea. So that's a nice part of our business, and it's probably the most fun. We enjoy that the most. And people enjoy it. People like to have it, and it's not something you do all the time or you can do everywhere. When we did research around New York State to go to different tea rooms. In the city, a lot of the hotels that used to do afternoon tea don't do it anymore. It's probably not a profitable business for them. But we just wanted to go and just see what we liked and what we didn't like. And there's a couple lovely places in the city that we did go and we both really enjoyed. But we wanted to be a little less formal than that. But boy, what a good time it was to do all the research to have it here. And it's nice. There's a lovely new tea cellar down on the next block. Her family is from Utah, and they did a lot of sales of loose teas. That was her mother's business, and they moved it here, and so we're a nice complement to each other's business. She doesn't do the afternoon tea and we don't sell the loose tea, so we kind of keep it, we each do our thing, and it's a nice addition. She's also an art gallery, so she's a great addition to the city. It's nice to have her here. But it's a different town than it's ever been. Which I think, like I said before, that happens in most communities. It's just nice to see the changes, to keep up with the times. It's great.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to go back to Thursdays. You talked about Thursday nights, yeah. Here. And I wondered if you could tell me a little bit more about what that was like.
Like, you got dressed up in your Sunday best outfit. You know, your shoes were clean, and a lot of women would wear gloves, and you'd see people with their baby carriages, and people walked as families, and men would be in suits and hats, like a 50s movie is what you'd see. Ladies in pearls and dresses, and they would just walk up and down the town and maybe make purchases, maybe not, but the stores were open until 9 o'clock. Mr. Richmond, for example, was always open late, and he would never, that was a dress shop in town. If most of the party dresses came from Mr. Richmond's, and he would let you take it home. If you went in and saw the dress and your mother wasn't with you, he'd say, take it home. If you like it, your mother will come back. If you don't like it, your mother will bring it back. But it was that kind of, he knew everybody. So he, that's the kind of trusting little town this was. So Thursday nights, people would walk around, stop in to see Mr. Richmond, see what was new. And you'd go and have your soda in the diner. Maybe if you were lucky, you would have pot roast in the diner and apple turnovers. They were famous for that. But you'd see almost all the families, and all the shops were open, which is a good thing, for most people were working, and to be able to get out at night as a family and shop, go to the movies or whatever. But that town was so lively on Thursday nights. It was like the big night out, other than your Saturday night party night. But that was fun.
You felt like you were gonna, you said something about you felt like you were gonna stifle if you stayed in the small town when you were very young.
I think I did. Growing up in an Italian family, it was a very strict Italian upbringing, and I'm grateful that I had it. But yeah, I grew up in the environment where single women didn't move out of the house until they were married. My father had passed away. I was in college, and after I finished that and made sure my mother was okay, I decided I had to go and spread my wings. I just had to find out what life was going to be like outside of Hudson. We're part of a very large family. My mother's one of 11. We have 44 first cousins, so a lot of people in this town were related to us. So you really didn't do too much without somebody knowing something that you were doing. And I felt that I had to experience a little more than that. So after my mother and sister were settled, I thought, okay, it's time to go. So I got in my car with two friends and we drove to San Francisco. It's just something I had to do just to experience life and see what there was. And driving cross country is a great thing to do. I think everybody should do it at least once in their life. I've been lucky enough to do it twice. I met my husband in San Francisco. We were sent to Europe to work for his work for 7 years. And during that time, my mother was taken ill, and he said, it's time to go home. And I thought, okay, we can go home and we'll see what else there is. And he said, no, we'll go home. I don't want you to regret anything. And I thought, that's a good boy. And I'm so happy I did, because I was very close with my mother and sister and most of the people in this town, and I didn't realize what I had missed. I loved my life, but I came back to a different feeling of reconnecting with my mother, which was great. But I would call my mother 14 times a week anyway and say, what's the recipe for? How did we make? Do you know? So we were always very close. But it was nice to come back to her. She would always come and live with us wherever we lived for maybe a month or two at a time, which was great because I've lived in such wonderful places that she wouldn't have been able to experience. So I'm blessed by having had that experience. And I'm lucky I have a wonderful husband who brought me back here, because I'm enjoying this part of my life now with him here and my sister. And my sister and I have always been very close. And she's just a wonderful woman. I'm grateful to have her. And I'm grateful to be able to work with her. I mean, how much more could I ask for? So, and we have such a good time. We're lucky. We have good friends. We have wonderful neighbors. The man across the street in the nail salon is Vietnamese. Our neighbor across the street is from France. His wife is from Portugal. Sometimes it's like the UN in here. when everybody starts talking, we don't know who's speaking what language. But it's just such a wonderful place to be. It's great. It's just so, it feels so good in here. It's like you can almost feel it when you come in. That's just a calming environment. What else did you want to ask me?
Well, now I want to ask you about the recipes you would call your mom to
ask.
Oh
my God. My mother was a good cook, but we were Italian, and I never knew how to make lasagna, for example. The first time I ever made it, I had to call her and ask her, how do I do this? Or how do I make bourguignon, which is a rolled beef? I didn't know how to do that. And usually Thanksgivings were at my mother's house, and I would call in when I lived in California, for example, and say, how do you make your broccoli bake? And I'm going to have the dinner. I'm inviting 30 strays, and I don't know how to make the pie. So she would tell me how she made her pie. Nobody made a pumpkin pie like my mother, to me. To this day, nobody makes one as good as her. But just how she did things. We grew up canning because she was from the farm, and we worked on the farm all summer. We always had an abundance of apples and pears and corn and beans, and she knew how to can all that. We would always make jam every year, and I continued making jam even after she was gone, just because I loved to do it. And I was lucky enough in California to live in a house that had a huge backyard that grew fruit and vegetables, so I could continue the canning and make her pickles. Just do a lot of the things that she would do. Her strawberry pineapple jam was the best. That was excellent. And her bread and butter pickles. But they're good, strong memories from when we were kids. You can keep the string beans, but we'll take the jam. But she was a good cook, and my sister and I learned to cook from her. And after my sister was in school, my mother went back to work. So I would start to cook the evening meal before she got home. So we've always been doing that, and my sister's always helped me. So that's where we got that from. That's why we can cook together. One of us can start something and know what needs to be done to it as the other one moves away to the... We just can follow around and complete the whatever we're making. It's hard for us, though, because we'll make a soup, for example, and we make it with whatever we have or whatever we feel like at the moment. People will say, will you make me a batch of that for the library we're having, the reading room? We can make it, but it's not going to be exactly the same because we don't cook with a recipe. It's all by taste and by feel, which is a good thing and a bad thing because we can't always duplicate exactly what you had, but it'll be close. And it's fun that way. It's just a little adventuresome. And we like to try new things, so the specials that we do are just... It comes out of our head. Somebody asked the other day if we sit down and make a menu for the week together. No, we kind of do it on the fly. We think, all right, what's fresh? What can we get this week? What do the local farmers have that we can just use, and we'll go get it. So we have a good time doing it. And it does remind us of our mother. We have pictures of them, my grandparents and my parents, on the wall. Old black and white photos that keep their spirits here with us. We lived in an apartment above my grandparents for years until I was college age. So we always grew up with the smell of Italian cooking. My grandfather used to make wine. We had a grape arbor in the back, and he would make wine, as did a lot of the neighbors. Some of the grapes came from California, for example, but we grew up in that Italian environment where you're going to make your wine. So we grew up with homemade wine. We also had a vinegar cellar, and then the canning cellar that we had. My father also had a sporting goods shop in the basement of the apartment building where his friends and neighbors would come and buy fishing lures and fishing poles and hunting supplies. The high school used to order the varsity jackets from him. All the sports equipment came from him. It was just, that was really fun because we got to meet a lot of people that we probably wouldn't have met from some of the outlying areas that would come and pick up things from him. He was a nice man and people enjoyed his company. So it was nice just because we were lucky. My sister and I say we had great parents. We were lucky to have nice parents. So we were raised with respect and taught to respect other people. So that's what we still try to do. We try to feed some of the people locally who we know need a little help being fed, and we just do that. That's the way that is. If we know that there's people who are hungry, and if I have food, you have food. So we slip things into people at night or in their mailbox, or we've been doing that since we've opened. We'll always do that.
I'm curious now about your time in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me a little bit more about?
Yeah, I wasn't really a hippie, but I wasn't really the straight-laced Italian, I'm going to get married and have children. That was never a big thing to me. I really wanted to find out what life was about. So my friends and I moved to the Haight-Ashbury in San Francisco. We weren't involved in the drug scene. We just lived in that neighborhood because the rent was cheap. But while we were there, we had saved up enough money to drive across. We were at the ballet in SPAC, and I looked at her. We were with our mothers, and I said, in 6 months, I'm moving to California. If you want to come with me, get in the car. So we decided to go. It was very difficult for me to leave my mother since my father had passed, but she understood me and gave me her blessing and said, you can come home. If you need to come home, you know you can always come back. And she just made me promise. I stopped at the church and said a prayer to St. Anthony and stuck a $100 bill in my bra so that she figured nobody would get that off me. Well, I drove all across country with the $100 bill in my bra just because my mother asked me. But I didn't work for about a year. I attended a few classes, like a pottery class and a photography class, just to figure out what I was going to do. And then I was running out of money, and someone suggested I get a job as a receptionist in a brokerage house, stock brokerage house. And I thought, okay, well, I can answer the phone. I put myself through college working for the telephone company here, so I figured, okay, I have good phone skills. So I went, and the man said, no, I can't hire you. You have a master's degree. He said, you won't stay. And I said, no, I probably won't stay, but I'll tell you what, I'll make you a deal. I'll stay for 6 months, and I'll give you the best 6 months receptionist you've ever had. He laughed and hired me. At the end of that 6 months, I got another job. I saw another opening, and I thought, I can do this. I can learn this. I don't have a business degree. I didn't have any business experience, but I figured I can learn anything. And I stayed with that firm for 15 years, and every 6 months, I got a promotion. So I ended up with a very good job from them. I became a vice president for them until my husband came home and said, they're going to transfer me to London. I just said, well, when do I leave? Only because we didn't have any children. It's not that we had to uproot anybody and replace them. And I thought, what an opportunity for me to go and do it. So we did that. I met my husband in San Francisco when my roommate and I got an apartment. He lived in the apartment upstairs. And when I met him, I knew he was going to be around for a long time in my life. I didn't know how. I had no interest in being married. Here I am married 32 years later. And that worked out for me. Worked out really well for me in San Francisco. And then we were in the UK in London for 7 years. We lived in Belfast for a year and a half first because my husband wanted to rethink in metric. He was born in the Republic of Ireland. So we went to do a 3-month project there, and it was in the late 80s during the time of a lot of the troubles. And I used to meet him for lunch just because we didn't know many people there. And it would get me out and focus me. But he called one day and said, I don't think you should come down today. I'll be home in a few minutes. There's a little excitement on the job. Okay, I say. Turn on the new news, and there his building is being blown up. So I thought, well, I know that he's safe because he's on his way home. And that was probably the first of the 3 times that that happened. And it extended our stay to a year and a half. But I never felt fear being there. I was always comfortable there. We lived in a neutral neighborhood. it was just a great experience to be able to go and do it. And from there in the UK for the rest of the 7 years in different, in Wales and Scotland, north of England, it was just, it was lovely to be able to do it. And here I am again.
Can you tell me a little bit about the project that he went to work
on? He worked on, yeah, he, it was a, he, they were building a shopping center. And he does big skylights on big buildings. And he was sent to England to teach them how to do the projects for a company that's up based out of Wisconsin. So he was sent there to teach teams how to build and how to fabricate, whatever. But like I say, he wanted to rethink in metrics. So when we went there, it was a block-long shopping mall with a big skylight atrium that he did. We were just in Belfast 2 months ago. We went back to visit his, my husband's family's all in Ireland yet, but we went back for a visit and we drove up to Belfast just because we wanted to see it, and it's still there and it's still beautiful. So it's nice. It's nice for him to be able, he can go in any major city in this country and say, I did that, because he's done some phenomenal jobs in every major city in this country, and now in some foreign countries. So it's been fun being able to see so many places because of his employment. So when he said, let's go back to Hudson, I thought, oh, I don't know if I could do that, but I'm so glad I did. I really am.
How about your master's degree?
I've never used it, my master's degree. My father said to me, I graduated when I was 17 years old. My father said, you're going to college, because he had never been. And I thought, I don't want to go to college. I'm only 17 years old. What am I going to do? And I didn't know what to do. And he said, you're going to be a teacher. That's it. Just go and be a teacher. And I had been a bit defiant before that. When he said, learn typing skills, I failed the class on purpose just because I was that kind of a strong-headed. So I thought, okay, I'll get a teaching degree. I didn't know what else to get. My friend said, come to college with me, be a roommate. I went to Oneonta State Teachers College and got a teaching degree and got a master's in secondary education. And I taught for a while in Shenango Bridge in the middle of the state, where a kid pushed me against a blackboard. I was small and thin and young, and he was 17 in the ninth grade and made sexual comments that I didn't appreciate. But we made it through that experience, and I thought, I don't think I really need teaching. So that's when I moved to California, and I really never used my master's. But I had a great career, just, I guess I ended up where I needed to be because I did well where I was. I ended up working for J.P. Morgan in the city, and someone that I had hired in California ended up hiring me after we moved back from London. Somebody called me and said, come and meet me in the city for dinner and, you know, we'll go hang out and come to work. I said, no, I'm too old to go back to work, and I was 55 years old, and I thought, I can't retest. And he said, please come to work for me, because come to work for me. I did. And it was, I'm happy I did it. It was great to be able to do it. But it's funny how you never know where life's going to bring you. Because like I said, someone I hired when he was 19 years old and just a branch cashier became a very established, well-placed position 20 years later in a different firm on a different coast. So you never know. Don't burn any bridges is my point to that, because you never know where your paths are going to cross. But that's the way we were brought up. We were brought up to try and respect people around us, be kind to people, not do any harm to anyone, just to try and live your life in a good way and make it a better place than when you started. That's what my father used to tell us. You know, that was strong values for him. He was very family oriented and wanted us to be, to keep those bonds, and we do. We're grateful. I never knew people didn't get along with their family until they went away to college. Like, it was unheard of for me. With 44 first cousins, we all talked to one another. We never, like, I wouldn't know what it meant not to speak to my mother for 4 years. I didn't get that. So I'm happy that I haven't had to have that. Yeah, it's just not a part of what we are as a family. What did you write?
I'm just trying to keep some notes.
Yeah.
That's really interesting about your family and those values that your father gave you.
Yeah.
I want to go back to early in the interview when you said that when you came back mm-hmm. to Hudson, you'd never appreciated how beautiful
no,
the Hudson Valley
never.
Was. And I was wondering if you could tell me a little more about how that felt.
Well, I think coming from, after living in California, it's not green in the summer. It's just, it's not. It's so dry and lovely and warm, but it doesn't rain enough. And so I would wish it would rain. Every September, I want it to be in the fall where the colors change and it's so vibrant in the Hudson Valley. It's just so gorgeous here. I would probably drive my husband crazy. In September, he would say, Tisha, just go home for a week and spend a week with your mother. I want it to smell apples and I want it to be out where there's going to be pumpkins. And it's like I needed to feel that. When we moved back here, it's not quite the same in Europe either. So when we finally moved back here, and I could experience all of that again. And I could experience winter where everything dies off and goes to sleep. And in the spring, it comes back to life. It's just not quite the same in other places that I'd lived. So I could really appreciate the beauty of the valley. And I think riding the train every day, it's so beautiful. The Hudson River really is lovely. And some of the cities along the way are just well maintained. And there's so many interesting things to see. In my lifetime, someone lived in Olana. The nephew of Frederick Church was living there when I was in college, so you weren't really allowed up on the grounds. My mother used to ice skate on the heart-shaped pond that's up there when they were children, when she was in high school, but that didn't happen after the nephew was living there. But it's such a beautiful vantage point if you go up there and just watch the sunset. I mean, it makes you just appreciate the mountains and the magnificence of really where this is. You can see apple farms, you can see all the fruit farms. I live on a road now where there was a magnificent fruit farm in my childhood that's now all the apple trees have been pulled up. So that's a little sad, but that's the way life is. Things do change, but this really, because it was a fruit and dairy farming county, it's lovely. And I think we forget that and we take things for granted. I don't really know if you ever appreciate where you were born while you're there as a child. Like I think I said earlier, you need to look at that through adult eyes and really, then you can appreciate your surroundings. It's like living in San Francisco. For years, you never went to the tourist places until somebody came to visit. Then you wouldn't go and enjoy those as well. When I moved to the UK, I made sure I took advantage of all that. But it's just, it really is a lovely place, rolling hills, and it's just, it's wonderful.
Do you cook things with apples here now?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. You have to make pie. You have to make turnovers. We make applesauce. We'll make it. And rhubarb. We grew up eating rhubarb, which is so... You can't take rhubarb out of the ground and bite it, but we did. That, and it was so sour. But we grew up doing that. You know, my uncle would pick it as we're moving the tractor trailer, and we would chew the rhubarb. But now I can't wait for the rhubarb to come out of the ground. And it's like I never took advantage of it when I was in California. I never really saw a lot of it there, even in the markets to buy it. So it's just one of those things. Rhubarb is my favorite thing to work with. So I always make sure I buy a lot of it and cut it up and freeze it so I can have it during the year. But it's good.
Do you have a garden?
I have a garden now. I am not the gardener in our family, I will say. The house that we bought, funny enough, I used to look at it when I was a child on the way to my mother's farm. We would pass this house, and I used to look at it and think, I'm going to live there someday. I'd never been in it. When I came back, I live in it now. Just through circumstances, I live there. And the woman who lived there before me was the first owner of the house, and she lived in it for 62 years. Her husband's family owned it for 90 years. But if they didn't grow it, they didn't eat it. But she used to own all of Mount Marino at one point. it was pear farms and apple farms and strawberry fields, and they had dairy cows and chickens and goats. And it, over through her lifetime, they sold bits to neighbors so that they could build houses. The chicken coop that they had is now apartments. So it's, we're surrounded by her property, in which there's still some pear trees, but my husband has taken over her garden. We have blueberries and raspberries of our own, and he grows every other fruit and vegetable we can. We have apricots and peaches, and these were all of Mrs. Freese's old trees, which is just so nice that we still have some of those. And we have her old map, so we can see where the mountain was divided into which orchard, and he does a great job of the gardening. If the deal is, if he grows it, I'll cook it. So he does that. But it's good, fertile land, so he enjoys doing that. And he was from a farm in Ireland. Although he was a dairy farmer, he still has that farm boy in him. So he that's his.
So you make your mom's jams and
pies? Oh, I do, yeah. We do all that. We make our own jam for here. And it's time-consuming, but my sister and I do it together, and we do it in big batches, so... And we freeze it now instead of canning it because it's more convenient. But we do it for here. We like to do it. Oh, we'll do it as long as we're able to do it. But my mother did so many holiday things that we do her way. My sister does some now and I do others. My mother used to make candy, so we do that around the holidays. And we sell what we make here, peanut brittle. She used to make cookies. All her cookies we make and sell. It's just like a bit of our childhood that we sell now.
Your mentioning holidays reminds me that I wanted to ask you about Thanksgiving, but I forgot to.
Thanksgiving used to kill me. Only because when we were away in California, I could never make it home for Thanksgiving. But because our father died at Christmas, I always made it a point of being home for Christmas. No matter where I lived, I would come home for that. But Thanksgiving, my mother would always have 42 people. All of her sisters would be there and their families. And I used to call, and it used to break my heart that I couldn't be there. But I was so blessed because my husband used to work with people from all over the country that couldn't get home. So they would always come to our house. I would always make dinner for them. And at least it gave me a diversion. But I would call and say, tell me who's there. Is Aunt Chick making the sweet potatoes? Did you make the cranberry sauce? Where's everybody sitting at the table? Just so I could envision it. I would cry, hang up the phone, and turn around and feed my guests just so that I could carry it on. But that was the only time I ever felt homesick was Thanksgiving Day. I've never felt homesick. I'm lucky that I'm one of those people that can move from a place and shut the door and be grateful I've had that and move on to the new thing. That's difficult for a lot of people, but it's never been an issue for me. And so I've never felt really homesick because I know I'm going to make a new home where I am, and it's a different phase of my life is coming. Thanksgiving used to rip me apart. But I'm grateful that we always had a lot of company so I could be diverted. Yeah. It was good. And there were, you know, it was a big American holiday that started with lasagna. So that was I never knew, for example, we always had pasta with my grandfather first and a chicken dinner or a steak dinner after that, and then a salad. We never had dessert, we had wine. I never got that pasta course was a first course thing. It never occurred to me until I went to Italy and actually looked at the menus, and finally I understood it. I never really wanted to go to Italy, being Italian, that's odd, but my husband really wanted to go, so when we went, I called my sister when I landed and said, I get it. I got when my grandfather, I understood why he felt he had to leave. I understood why he brought that tree that was in the side of our house and our yard. I never knew what that tree was. They're everywhere. He brought that tree from Italy with him. He brought a fig tree with him. We had that in the backyard. I didn't get that. I didn't get that everybody had a grape arbor. We grew up with a grape arbor. We grew up with a big vegetable garden on one side and flower garden on the other side. I mean, he was a very manicured gardener he always wore a tie and a vest when he was in the garden, didn't matter when. And after dinner, he would have put his hat on and go to the front gate and just hang there and have a cigar. But I didn't get it. And when I grew up, we lived across the street from the Allen Street School. And I used to go out the back alley to school. I never got why people would make fun of me being Italian. I didn't get that. I got it. I think when I became older and met my husband, who's from Ireland, and had those things with the Irish in different places of the country for him. But I didn't understand that growing up. So I finally got the whole Italian thing when I went to Italy and had my grandfather's pasta and had my grandfather's steak, and just, I loved it. That's where I'd like to retire, would be there. But I love that. But we grew up in the apartment above him, so we always had whatever they had, we had. Christmas Eve used to kill us because we had 7 fish, and they would cook it all day long, and the smell of that fish used to kill us. It was just eel and squid and fried smelts and haddock and octopus salad, and it was torture. But we always knew the present was coming the next day. But that we have fond memories of those holidays. But Thanksgiving always started with lasagna. Always.
You said that when you moved around,
mm-hmm.
you always knew that you were going to be able to make a home when you mm-hmm. got to a new place.
Mm-hmm.
What was that like? What did you do in order to make that happen?
I have a very strong feeling about buildings having a spirit and having the connection to the people who've been in them. Whenever we've had to move either into an apartment or finding our first apartment, for example, in California, I said to my friend, let me feel it. She just shook her head. But I could tell if it was going to be the place that was comfortable to live in. The minute we opened the door, I would know. When we finally found a place that we did rent for the first time, I thought, yeah, this is it. This is comfortable. This is going to be home for me. After I met my husband and we moved in together, I had to do the same thing. Like, but I can feel it. I can feel if it's the right place for me to be. We were looking across the street to rent a place before we bought this building. When I turned around and saw this, I thought, oh my God, that's it. I can feel that. And I know that I can be happy wherever I am, because I'm the kind of person that I want to experience as much about life as you can find. If it's out there, I want to see it. I don't necessarily want to try it all, but I don't want to zip line, but I want to watch you do it. I want to see it. I want to know what the Chinese people feel like. I want to know how the Japanese treat each other. I want to experience that. So I know that I can go and live in a place and gain as much of it as I can. I want to live with the British people, eat what they eat, see how they work, do what they do. I don't want to do what I do there. I want to do what they do. Just so I know that I'm going to be happy where I am, because I'm going to gain an experience. There's so many lessons to learn in life, and to me, that's how you learn them. So it was easy for me to go and do it. It's when I walk in the door and feel it, then I know that the lessons are coming to me. That's why I knew I had to leave Hudson in the beginning. But what I have gained has brought me back, you know, with different eyes and just with different experiences. And there's a lot more to come. I remember when I was 16, I met my aunt's aunt. She was 93 and had just come back from India by herself. And I thought, that's what I want to be. That's who I want to be, would be that. I recently heard a story about a woman who used to come in here a lot, Eleanor, passed away at the age of 92, pumping gas. To me, that's brilliant. Now, it's not too brilliant for the kid at the gas station, and I'm sure it was a kid, but she dropped dead at the gas pump. But I'm thinking, way to go, Eleanor, because you're on your way to somewhere. That's what I'd like to be.
So Italy?
Maybe. But I have a whole list of places. I could retire to Italy easily. I love the people. I love the whole family thing on Saturday nights. Have you been? So, I mean, you see that. You know what that's like. And I love the way they treat each other as a family. I like the way they dress. I like what they eat, what they drink. I love it. I think it's wonderful. But there's so many other places I want to go. I've never been to Vienna. I'd like to see the boys choir. I've never done that. I'll get there. But I've been to 48 states. I mean, there's not a lot of people that can say that. The only two states I haven't been to are the Dakotas. My sister's husband is from the Dakotas, North Dakota. You think I would have been there? My mother had been there. I've never been. Everyone in my family's been but me. But there's so much to see in this country that we don't even know is out there. There's really just so much to explore here, and I'm so grateful I've been able to do it. I did Alaska and Hawaii in the same year, and I thought, who gets to do that? But it was only because my husband was working there. I thought, okay, I'm coming on this day. And it's just because of him, I've just seen so many things, and so I was able to take my mother. And she was a great one to say, you could call her tonight and say, okay, tomorrow morning I'm going to come, I'll fly home, I'll pick you up, and we're going to drive to New Orleans. Okay, she'd say. So she was a great one for trying that. So my sister and I know that I got that from my mother. Just, it's a blessing. I'm grateful. Life is to be lived. Live it.
So how do you make the list?
I feel it. Do you feel it? I feel like I really want to go to India, and I will. I've had friends just come back from that, but I think because it's different, I was lucky enough to spend a month in China and Japan and Thailand. And so I've done those things. I've been in North Africa. I've been to the Arabian countries. It's just, if it's out there, I want to see it. I haven't been to South Africa. I'd love to do that. There's just so many things that you learn. For example, I never learned that there were POW camps in the United States during World War II. I never knew that until I moved to England and met two men who had been in prison camps in the United States. I never knew that those even existed. I never learned that in any textbook. So it reinforced to me that there's so much to learn, and I should learn as much as I can. I've always been an avid reader. A man came in here one day, and I didn't remember him at all. He used to live across the street in the brick building. So he came in here one day and he said, oh my God, you're Tisha Tanzillo, aren't you? Yes. He said, Tisha, I remember you. You used to sit on the front porch of 101 Union Street, and I would walk around the block with my grandfather, and you'd be reading a book, and everybody else would be playing ball in the street. And that is exactly, he's so right about that. And I said, I'm sorry, I don't remember you. And he said, no, of course you wouldn't. You were always reading. You never looked up. But I was lucky that I had parents that let me read. So that I'm delighted for that.
What kind of books do you like to read when you were a kid?
When I was a kid, I read probably all of the Nancy Drew mystery novels, the Hardy Boys, those kinds of things. Now I read anything I can get my hands on, fiction and non, so whatever. If it's there, I'll read it. If it's a newspaper, my husband will read it. And funny enough, he got that from his father. When I first met his father, he had a stack of newspapers next to his chair. And my husband will read a newspaper in any language and anywhere. We were actually in Tunisia when the Berlin Wall came down. And I was so upset because I couldn't understand the TV. It was only one channel in Arabic, whatever language that was. I couldn't quite figure out what was happening. I couldn't wait till the next day to find a British newspaper just so we could read about what it was. And eventually, after watching it long enough, you could see what it was. But, you know, I wanted all the details of that. And now we have them.
Mm-hmm. Could you tell me a little bit more about your husband?
My husband, yes, came to this country when he was 16. And when he was growing up in Ireland, he's one of six. He's from a very rural, poor area in Ireland, small farmers they were. And in the days of his childhood, he grew up the way my mother grew up. He grew up in a dirt floor with a big hearth and the pot over like you'd see in a museum. That's his childhood. That was my mother's childhood. And they would have great conversations about who did what to what horses when they were both young. You would think that they were contemporaries from their upbringings. But in the days when he was 16, he had to leave because he couldn't support all the people on the farm. And the oldest ones left the house and either went to England or the United States for employment. And he was in the middle. He's 2 younger than him. And so they knew the farm would go to his brother, Sean, which it has. He's the youngest. And his older brother went to England. His sister had come to New York. And she became a citizen while she was here, and she could claim him in. In those days, there was a lottery and a visa, and you had to apply. But he applied for a green card and was granted it because she was already a citizen. So he's had a green card since 1974. He just became a citizen last February. He was here for 40 years. He came in 73, got his green card in 74, and 40 years later became a citizen. For years, we would talk about that, and he's so politically minded that I thought he would have done it years ago. No one knows American politics like he does, so I would assume that he would want to vote and express his views, but he didn't do it. And he just said to me one night in November, last November, I think I'm going to apply for citizenship now. Go ahead, do it. So my sister and her husband and I went up to see him be sworn in. And it's such a proud ceremony. I shouldn't say not so much for my husband, but he was very proud to be able to do it. But there are so many people who have done it under much more difficult circumstances than he's had, or what people have gone through to become. There's a woman from Somalia, so you know what she's probably gone through to get here. She's in her 60s. And to watch her walk up and become a citizen, and she's crying so hard because she's so proud, it's a very moving experience. We take it so much for granted because, you know, we're born here, and yep, this is the greatest place to be born. And I didn't really realize that until I went away and realized there are people who hate Americans because they're Americans. I never experienced that. I mean, I'm a white woman from this country. I didn't know what prejudice was until I lived in Belfast, and I was a Catholic, so I had that. So I never knew what that felt like. But watching people become citizens of this country because they want to be here, it's marvelous to experience that. If you ever get the chance to go to the ceremony, do it, because it's just so moving. Because people are thrilled to be able to be free. And that's what it is, to be free. It took my husband 40 years. But he's didn't finish high school in Ireland. He got a GED here because he thought he needed that because I was college educated and we were dating. And he came home and said, I'm going to go take the GED test tomorrow. I thought, well, you can't do that. You have to study. You don't know American history. I'll be fine. Well, he passed all his exams. He's just that way. He's well-read, so. And he's a physical worker. He's done skylights since 1982. He's done big skylights on big buildings. And it's a craft. It's amazing to me. I just watched him complete the student union building in New Paltz, State University of New Paltz. And I went down with him for the day. He had to repair something that was there. And I think, what a skill to be able to do that. He doesn't think it's any big deal. I'm pretty proud of him just because he can do it. But he's a wonderful, family-oriented, kind person who, he's a gift. He really is a gift. And he came a long way to meet me. He figures he came 6,000 miles. I went 3,000 to meet him. And we were just waiting for one another. I met him. I was trying to pop open the windows of the apartment we rented. And he came down and said, can I help you do that? And that's when I knew it was going to be a long time. And it has been ever since. But I'm grateful to have him. And it's been a little more difficult for him. All of his family still lives in Ireland. So we would go more often when my mother-in-law was still living, my father-in-law. But the year that we lived in Belfast, for example, you know, there's reasons for everything. When we lived in Belfast, my father-in-law was dying of cancer. We were able to go down to his place every weekend or every other weekend or for the whole year and a half. He died while we were living in England. But if we hadn't done the Belfast experience, we would have never been able to spend that time with my father-in-law, which was so important to my husband that he got to be able to do it. So he died, and my mother had cancer the same year that he passed. So I came home here for about 3 months with her until she had her surgery and she was okay. And when I went back, they said she doesn't need chemo, you know. So I stay every Friday. I would call my husband and say, no, I'm going to come next week. I wanted to know that she was okay, emotionally okay. When I finally went home, she called me one day and I answered the phone and the woman was crying because she thought she was going to lose her hair. My mother was not a vain woman, but I think that just frightened her. I said, Ma, you have so much hair. Don't worry. I'll come home. She said, no, don't come home. I'll come to you when I'm done. I said, okay, then we're going hat shopping. We're going to buy big scarves. So after her chemotherapy, she kept saying to her doctors, hurry up. I have to go stay with my daughter in London. Hurry up. I don't want to come next week. Hurry up. And when she finally finished, she came and spent 3 months with us. And it was after she went home that my husband said, I think we should go home. I don't want you to regret any experiences with your mother. My mother was a really cool, relaxed, comfortable woman. And she had a good life. She's good. But she and my husband, the day I got married, my mother zipping my dress says, when you get divorced, Tisha, it will be your fault. That's, she thought my husband walked on water. Yeah, he doesn't, but he's a good guy.
Thank you so much for telling me this.
Oh, you're
story.
Welcome. You're welcome.
Yeah, I want to be mindful of the fact that you have to go in a little bit. Yeah. So I wonder if there's anything that we haven't gotten to that you want to share.
I think you've gotten a ton.
Yeah.
Probably more than you bargained for.
I'm very happy for it.
Good. Yeah. Oh, I'm glad. It's a new experience for me, and, you know, I'm all about experiences.
Well, thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
I'm going to
do what you have to do.